Welcome back to another episode of Retire with Confidence Radio, the only personal finance podcast designed and broadcast for retirees right here in Arizona. I'm your host, as always, Kobe Kress, and today we're going to talk about a question I have received a surprising number of times from clients over the years. That question is whether a client should buy a recreational vehicle or RV in their retirement. I want to talk you through some of the items you may want to consider before taking the leap into recreational vehicle ownership, and then I'll provide you with a few alternatives to buying an RV if you decide owning is not for you, but you would still like to enjoy the open road. But first, I want to start today's episode with a new weekly segment where I bring you insights and stories from economics and financial sources across the internet so that you can stay up to date and get information directly from the same sources relied on by financial professionals every day. Links to anything I discuss will be provided in the show notes. And with that being said, I hope you enjoy. And please go to retirewithconfidenceradio.com and send me a message and let me know what you think and if you want to hear more segments just like this one. All right, I know we are all tired of talking and hearing about it, so please forgive me, but in COVID-19 news, First Trust Portfolios, an investment manager with a reputation for providing excellent educational resources for financial professionals, has created a new COVID-19 tracker to give you all the most recent up-to-date data on the virus and its impact specifically on hospital capacity and spread. What I love about First Trust is that they focus on facts and statistics, which can help you cut through the noise coming from most media outlets out there and hopefully help you draw your own conclusions about where we stand and whether or not things are getting better or worse. Check out their new tracker. The link can be found in the show notes. Speaking of First Trust, Brian Westbury, one of my favorite economists and the chief economist over there at First Trust, has written an interesting article, along with Bob Stein, titled "Miscalculating Risk, Confusing Scary with Dangerous." In the essay, they discuss the four classifications we can assign to anything. Those classifications are scary and dangerous, scary but not dangerous, dangerous but not scary, and not dangerous and not scary. They also discuss the second and third order consequences we face if we miscategorize things using this system. As an example, Brian points out in this article that government-imposed lockdowns, regardless of how you feel about them from an emotional or political standpoint, have had one often overlooked second order consequence, which is the drastic reduction in life-saving medical screenings that have taken place since the shelter-in-place orders went into effect. When the orders took effect, cervical cancer screenings went down 68%, cholesterol panels were down 67%, and blood sugar tests to detect diabetes were down 65%. We'll have to wait and see if the drastic reduction in this testing will have any long-term deleterious effects, but it is important to draw attention to this consequence so that we can hopefully work towards a way to slow the virus and ensure other life-saving tests are being performed. As always, Brian Westbury does an excellent job of making statistics and economics approachable and simple to understand, which is not an easy task. Speaking of risk, perhaps the most fascinating article I read this past week was titled "The Science of Risk" by Steven Landsberg. In that article, he outlines a case that individuals are actually pretty good at assessing risks to themselves and then making advantageous decisions. My favorite part of this article was Stephen's example of subsistence farmers in both medieval England and modern-day third world countries. Economists have long questioned why so often in both of these settings, subsistence farmers have been known to own small strips of land spread out across their villages. Of course, from an efficiency standpoint, it stands to reason that if they were to trade land with other farmers and consolidate their land in one area, they would benefit from economies of scale, and not to mention a great deal of saved time as they spend a good amount of time traveling between their different plots of land. Economists have long puzzled this, and many have assumed that they simply lack understanding or proper education. However, Deirdre McCloskey, a historical economist, has advanced an alternative theory as to why these farmers operate in seemingly inefficient ways. Deirdre proposes that in a region without any organized insurance markets, farmers have learned to diversify their land and spread out their crops so they don't lose everything in case some negative event, like a flood, ravages their crops in a specific location. Deirdre goes on one step further and has determined that the price that these farmers are paying in the form of travel and inefficiency to hedge their crops against certain risks is nearly equal to the price that farmers are willing to pay in more developed areas for crop insurance. Truly fascinating. Human beings are quite incredible and amazingly adept at making decisions based on the risk that they face as individuals. Scott Grannis, in his economic blog, The Calafia Beach Pundit, has an excellent article titled The Housing Market is Alive and Well, where he discusses the facts that mortgage rates are back down near historic lows and that the lowering of mortgage rates have, in many cases, offset the possibility of home prices being drastically reduced during this pandemic. He also makes a case that rates have room to go even lower if history is any indication, based on the spread between mortgage rates and the 10-year treasury. I talk about this in episode 5 of Retire with Confidence Radio when I interviewed Zach Wayne regarding mortgage rates. The possibility of lower rates, however, does not mean you should pass up on a money-saving deal right now. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, and if you have a great deal on the table, you should consider taking it instead of holding out for better rates, which may or may not materialize. Lastly, in interesting Arizona news, two Arizona lawmakers, Debbie Lasko and Paul Gosar, are calling for Peoria to be the home of the United States Space Force's new United Space Force Command, after noting that Peoria meets all the requirements laid out by the Department of the Air Force back in May. Those requirements stated that the new Space Force Command headquarters location would need to be in an area with an AARP index score of 50 or higher, must be located 25 miles from another military installation, and it must be in the top 150 metro areas in the country. These are all criteria that Peoria meets. All right, back to our main topic for today, which is whether buying an RV in retirement is right for you. I'm going to add a disclaimer right here at the onset. I love RVing. I grew up traveling the country playing baseball and camping with my family, and some, if not most, of my fondest childhood memories took place out on the open road as we traveled in our RV. I understand the desire in retirement to pack up and hit the open road and see everything you've ever dreamed about seeing and doing. With that disclaimer firmly in place, let me state that for a lot of folks out there, they oftentimes don't understand all of the possible pitfalls and potential money traps that come with buying an RV until it's too late. They also are not aware of some of the alternatives available to them that will allow them to see everything they want to see without shelling out potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars of their hard-earned retirement savings, and in the worst scenarios, risking their secure retirement in the process. When considering the purchase of a recreational vehicle, it's important to keep in mind that RVs are expensive to purchase. When discussing something that will be practical for you to travel in retirement, you are most likely going to want to own a motorhome and not a tent trailer, which means you can expect to pay well upwards of $70,000 for a small basic motorhome. And for many, especially those looking for a Class A luxury motorhome, you can expect to pay upwards of $200,000 or more. This out-of-pocket upfront expense alone can cripple your retirement plan. But this price doesn't consider all of the other expenses associated with owning an RV. Let's take a look at some of those other expenses here quickly. There is, of course, the cost of insuring your RV, which can cost you several thousand dollars a year. There's also the cost of maintaining the vehicle as well. Think of repairing your RV similar to repairing your home. However, an RV has more items that can break, including a motor and a drivetrain to take care of, something you don't have to worry about with your home. On an RV, you can expect to repair items such as broken toilets, busted thermostats, faulty appliances, boiled carpet, and the list goes on and on. Tires alone on your new RV can cost thousands of dollars, and depending on how much you are using your RV, you may need to replace them quite regularly. For a lot of folks out there, they don't have room at their house to park their new RV, so they're forced to rent a storage space, which again, depending on where you live, can cost you a few thousand dollars annually. If you're comfortable with all of these costs, then you need to consider the cost of RVing itself. What type of campgrounds are you going to stay in? If you want to stay in a nice park with nice amenities, you're going to have to pay for that as well. A few sources on the internet will tell you that once you purchase your new RV with proper planning, you may be able to travel for as little as $50 a day. But for most folks out there who don't know how to find the best deals, when the best times to travel are, and may not have extreme flexibility in their schedules, they can expect to pay nearly double that, which does not include any expenses associated with the RV itself. You also need to consider that RVs are not exactly gas-efficient vehicles, with most of them getting anywhere between 8 and 12 miles per gallon. And since most folks who own an RV didn't purchase it to travel simply around their own city, they're covering long distances to see distant places, and therefore gas expense is another important consideration. One of my last two major concerns when it comes to purchasing an RV in retirement is depreciation. A Class A motorhome, which is at its most basic level a motorhome built around a bus chassis, can be expected to depreciate around 18% in its first year after purchase. By the fifth year of ownership, it can be expected to have depreciated around 37%. By year 10, it will most likely have depreciated around 57%. And after 20 years, it will have depreciated on average 88%. Which means a motorhome purchased for $100,000 today will only be worth $12,000 after 20 years. Ouch. You may be thinking, well, I'm not looking to buy a luxurious Class A motorhome. A Class C or a travel trailer will fit me just fine. Unfortunately, the depreciation rates are not any better for those classes either. There's no escaping the harsh reality of severe depreciation on RVs. Now, you may be thinking that all these repairs and maintenance costs I talked about don't apply to you because you've done your research and you're buying from a reputable brand. Although I certainly recommend research and reputability, you should know that in Arizona, most RVs are not protected by Arizona's lemon laws. Courts in Arizona have held that defective RVs are not covered by our lemon laws for several reasons. One reason is that there are several manufacturers involved in the building of an RV, and Arizona lemon laws exclude vehicles that weigh over 10,000 pounds. Lack of lemon laws has led to some manufacturers lowering their standards and producing subpar motorhomes comprised of subpar components. All right, I know I've been a bit down on buying RVs, and here's why. I've seen too often where folks buy an RV in retirement and it has drastically reduced their ability to live the lifestyle they would like later on. Remember, your investments are a tool to create retirement income. And if we reduce those investments with a big purchase and ongoing expenses, we reduce our potential long-term retirement income. This is especially dangerous early in retirement. Unfortunately, this is always when I find folks are most eager to buy an RV in the first place. Okay, it's time for some good news. And this is the news or advice that I give all my clients when they express the desire to buy an RV. You don't have to own an RV to enjoy an RV. We now live in a world where renting an RV is as easy as it's ever been. Before you invest your hard-earned dollars into an RV, possibly compromising your retirement plan, why not rent one for a month, travel, and see if this is truly the lifestyle you desire? You can also explore different types of RVs during this time to see which fits your lifestyle best. It will be money and time well spent. Depending on where you live, you can often rent Class A motorhomes. Again, those are built on a bus chassis and often offer a more luxurious experience for as little as $175 a night for an older model and a newer model that is more luxurious for around $450 a night on average. Now that's a lot of money, but it will most likely equate to less than the $200,000 plus you can expect to pay for one of these Class A behemoths new off the lot. You can also opt for a travel trailer pulled behind your vehicle for an average of around $100 a night. Even better news, the share economy brought about by technology has made it easier than ever to find and compare rental options here in Arizona. You can choose to rent from a formal rental operation like Cruise America, which has a location in Mesa, or you can choose to rent from individual owners through websites like Outdoorsy, which allow you to rent an RV from individuals the same way you can now rent someone's guest room using Airbnb instead of staying in a hotel. I'm not trying to tell you that you absolutely should not buy an RV. For some of you out there, owning an RV is a lifetime dream, and you are perfectly aware of the potential pitfalls. For you, I would simply tell you to speak with your advisor before doing anything to make sure you aren't negatively affecting your chance at a successful retirement. For others of you out there, I hope this helped to cast a light on the potential issues of owning an RV, and I hope it also cast a light on the possibility of renting an RV to save you money, headache, and regret. All right, that's all I have for you today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I'd love to hear from you regarding what you'd like me to cover on future episodes. So please go to retirewithconfidenceradio.com and send me a message. I think I will end today's podcast with a quote from one of my all-time favorite economists and thinkers, Thomas Sowell. When you want to help people, you tell them the truth. Have a great week, everyone.
Retire with Confidence Radio is provided for general information purposes only and does not constitute specific accounting, legal, tax, or other professional advice. You should consult a financial advisor familiar with your unique financial situation before making any financial decisions.